Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Hello, this is David Lee from Prevent Connect. Today, I'm pleased to be talking with Sarah DeGue. She is a behavioral scientist at the Division of Violence Prevention at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me. I'm really pleased to be able to speak with you. In June of 2014, you were an author of the article, A Systematic Review of Primary Prevention Strategies for Sexual Violence Perpetration, that was published in the journal Aggression and Violent Behavior. And I think this is a really important article for those of us who are doing prevention work in sexual violence. And I know that also recently the National Sexual Violence Resource Center did also release the key findings from that paper. And so I want to talk to you about that paper and what this means for prevention people. What do you see as the key findings from this article?
Okay, David. So we conducted a systematic review of all of the prevention strategies that had been evaluated in the scientific literature in the last 30 years. And what we wanted to look for were the programs that were effective for preventing sexual violence perpetration, and also programs that were promising and programs that were not effective. And what we found were that there were, in the last 30 years, only two programs that have been found to be effective in a rigorous evaluation using behavioral sexual violence outcomes to prevent sexual violence perpetration. Those two programs are Safe Dates and the Building Level Intervention of Shifting Boundaries. And both of those programs were developed and evaluated for middle and high school students and use approaches that are situated within the dating violence context. We also identified two programs that look particularly promising. They haven't yet been shown to have effects on sexual violence perpetration per se, but they have shown effects in a rigorous evaluation on other sorts of outcomes like attitudes, bystanding behavior, and other sorts of risk factors for sexual violence. And those two programs are Coaching Boys into Men and Bringing in the Bystander. Coaching Boys into Men is a social norms-based program and with a bystander component for high school athletes, males in particular, and the Bringing in the Bystander program is a bystander-focused program for college students. And so those four programs are really strategies that we found with the strongest level of evidence at this point for preventing sexual violence perpetration.
Can you talk a little bit about what you used to define what meant effective? Because I think you raised some really important issues that what you were looking at first was, did it change actual sexual violence perpetration behavior for those first two programs? And so can you just talk a little bit more about why you used that criteria and why that's important for the research?
Absolutely. So to be considered effective in our review and generally in the way CDC defines effective prevention strategies, a study needs to use a really strong research design that would allow us to really attribute the effects of the program to the changes in behavior to that intervention itself. And the changes in behavior that we're most interested in are those that are behavioral. So we want to see actual decreases in rates of sexual violence victimization or perpetration in these studies. And so we had two criteria. One was that a study use a rigorous or strong research design, such as a randomized controlled trial, and that they evaluate these behavioral outcomes. We also looked at studies that used a rigorous design but looked at these other sorts of risk factors in lieu of behavioral outcomes. And so those are the studies that we defined as more promising, but not yet with known effectiveness.
So some of them that you saw as promising are ones that are looking at pieces such as changes in attitudes or behavioral intent and those types of indicators of potential change.
That's right.
This is hard to measure change, so this has to be somewhat over time, too, because if you measure at the beginning of a presentation and at the end of a presentation, you really can't actually measure the change. For these to be seen as effective, you have to also be looking at this over time, right?
That's right. So we also, as part of assessing the rigor or the strength of a research design, we looked at whether they included a follow-up period. And so if you can't possibly assess, of course, a change in behavior from the beginning of a one-session program to the end of a one-session program because no time has passed. And so what we wanted to look for were studies that followed participants longer, such as ideally more like 6 months, so that there was a period of time where you could see some behavior change. An even longer follow-up period would be more ideal.
Great. So these findings, I think, are very interesting for us because it shows us just a few programs. Is this suggesting that those are the only programs people should be implementing if they're doing sexual violence prevention?
So no, unfortunately, there are some big gaps left in the field. And so while we've learned a lot about what works and frankly what doesn't work to prevent sexual violence, we don't have an effective program at this point that we can point to for all populations and for all settings. And so what we would encourage communities to do and practitioners to do is to try to look at these strategies first to see whether there is an effective or promising strategy that might be appropriate for their population. And if that's not possible, then looking at the kinds of components that are included in those effective strategies, and also looking at what we call the principles of prevention. And those are a set of sort of standards in the field of prevention that have been identified that are associated with more effective prevention strategies. And those are things like a program that's more comprehensive or addresses multiple risk factors or multiple influences on behavior that are appropriate to the developmental stage of the participants, that have a sufficient dosage or number of contact hours to actually have an effect on behavior, and some other sorts of components of that are associated with effective strategies. And so we provided some guidance around what those components are that you might look towards. And so if you're in the community and you're looking at this paper and you want to get some ideas about how to improve your own strategy in the field or develop a new comprehensive strategy, you can take these two pieces of information, the best available research evidence and also what we know about what works for prevention in general, and sort of combine them to assess whether a strategy you're considering or implementing is likely to have the best effect.
Yeah. One of the most interesting pieces in this article that I think is really compelling is that it was very clear that single sessions were not effective at preventing perpetration. In fact, you weren't even finding much in changes in other areas, too.
That's right. We actually found that 60% of the studies that we evaluated were one-session educational programs with college students, and not a single one of them, unfortunately, showed any effects on actual behavior over time. And what we've learned from those studies and also some other studies of single-session programs or programs that are focused primarily on education and awareness are really just not sufficient on their own to change a behavior as complex as sexual violence. And so we would recommend that communities, again, consider a more comprehensive approach with strategies that are more intensive and that include skills-building components as well as strategies that might change social norms or change beliefs or other influences on behavior.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that really, you know, is an important message from this article that I think is really helpful for prevention practitioners. And it doesn't mean that you can't have single sessions, but single sessions in themselves wouldn't do that. But if it's embedded in a broader, more comprehensive strategy, it's more likely. But when I look at those interventions that you have seen as identified as evidence-based or as promising, they are indeed much more than a single session.
That's right. The programs that we looked at that were much more intensive and typically had multiple components and were stretched out over a minimum of two or three sessions that were longer than an hour, or up to 10 sessions with some additional components as well. And so these types of programs seem to be more effective. And in fact, when we looked just kind of across the literature in general, we found that longer interventions overall were more likely to have positive effects on multiple outcomes than the shorter interventions.
Well, great. I think that's really important for us to be able to think about as we are developing our prevention programs. I am talking with Sarah DeGue, and Sarah is a behavioral scientist at the Division of Violence Prevention at the CDC, and we are talking about the article that she is an author of that was recently published in Aggression and Violent Behavior. The article is called A Systematic Review of Primary Prevention Strategies for Sexual Violence Perpetration, and I think this is an article that's been very helpful for prevention practitioners to be able to move forward in being able to think about how they will be able to develop and how they can implement prevention practices and use the evidence that we've seen from research in what this says. Now, there's two other pieces I think that are very interesting in this, is that in one of them, there was in the Shifting Boundaries program, what was found to be effective was the building intervention, not the classroom presentation piece.
Yeah, the building level intervention of Shifting Boundaries is really unique and sort of interesting, I think. It's the key component of that seems to be this hotspot mapping that happens within the sessions of the program, of the classroom curriculum, where they ask students to identify parts of the school where they feel less safe. And then the staff from the school can step in and try to increase monitoring in those areas or do other sorts of interventions to make those areas of the school more safe. And that component of the intervention is really interesting because it can be easily combined with other interventions. So, for instance, a school could implement the Safe Date classroom curriculum, which is a 10-session dating violence prevention strategy, alongside a building-level intervention like the one in Shifting Boundaries, and really have a multi-level intervention that in combination could be very effective. And so that's the way that we would see those types of strategies being combined in a really unique and hopefully effective way.
And what I really appreciate about it is that it's thinking about not just creating change around individual knowledge or even individual skills, but to try to be able to create community level or, in that case, school-wide level shifts. And so I think that that really speaks well from those of us looking at prevention from a socio-ecological perspective. It really gives a good example.
Absolutely. It's something that we've been trying to identify more ways to do that effectively over time. And in sexual violence, we have primarily strategies that work at the individual and relationship level, but we're trying to find ways that we can also impact the environment, social norms at the population level, and other sorts of pieces out at the higher levels of the social ecology, as you said, that can help to reinforce the messages that happen in these individual and relationship level sessions.
Right, and then what we see, interesting, while it's not a program, we saw that the passage of Violence Against Women Act, which was a policy change, and it was not even prevention policy per se, but actually did in this also emerged as a strategy, though perhaps one that you can't implement in your local programs, but really speaks to the advantage of looking at community level and societal level change to be able to change behaviors.
Yeah, that was really interesting. It was actually the criminal justice activities associated with VAWA funding that were associated with reduced rates of rape in communities that received that funding. And so that does give us some additional ideas about how strategies at these multiple levels and different types of strategies beyond just primary prevention can be combined to create the best environment for change.
Well, great. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time with speaking with me. I want to encourage all of our listeners to go ahead and you can either read the article that's in Aggression and Violent Behavior. It was e-published in June 2014. Also, the National Sexual Violence Resource Center put together a very nice summary of the key findings, and that is also something that is available, and we'll have a link on the Prevent Connect site to be able to get that. So thank you, Sarah, for joining me today.
Thank you so much for talking to me. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission, or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CalCASA.org.